Hey, welcome back to The Bright Side. John and I this week are going to be talking about Batman Damned in a little bit. How you doing, John?
Fantastic, sir. How are you?
Doing awesome. This week saw Halloween and Halloween 2018. Jen and I bought Halloween, the original one, and we watched that the night before. We watched that Thursday night. And then went and saw Halloween 2018, and 2018 was really good.
I heard some pretty good things about it. Haven't seen it yet myself, but
yeah, it's my opinion of it is it's better than the first one, but it's nothing without the first one, if that makes sense,
right?
Because
yeah, of course,
it's a lot of fun. It did a ton of callbacks to the first one, and so it wouldn't be anything without the first one.
Right. Well, I heard it took in like $77 million over the weekend, which is quite a bit for a horror movie.
Yeah.
They don't usually do that much, so.
Yeah, broke records for that. Broke record for a female-led horror movie, or horror movie, maybe even a female-led movie. Didn't catch Venom, though.
No, but I guess what I kind of like without seeing it is it, you know, this basically 97 Halloween movies that they've made, but this one is like a beeline from the first one to this one and kind of assuming that none of the other ones ever happened. So,
yeah, they actually even say that in
I
the movie
that was
parts of
interesting.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. They purposely did that. It's good. Scary. Good. It's a good movie. What have you been
good
up
deal.
To?
Yeah. Just finished watching episode one of The Haunting of Hill House, literally 5 minutes before we started this. And I was kind of glad to turn the lights on and come over here and do this. Because
really?
It looks like it's going to be pretty good. You know, episode one starts off, you know, a little slow. I mean, there's a couple of, you know, there's some shock moments in a couple of jumps, but it's more story setup than anything. But it looks like it's going to be pretty good. I mean, overall, it's an interesting story. How scary it's going to be, I don't know. I've heard all kinds of, you know, if you look at social media, people are saying it's the scariest thing ever made. And, you know, they want to throw up after watching it because they're so scared. And, you know, I can't speak to that because I've only watched the first episode. But, you know, sitting here by myself in the house with all the lights off, you know, it makes you jump a little bit. So, you know,
yeah. We'll
see. If you're into that sort of thing and you like to be on edge while you're watching TV, I think it's definitely going to put you there. So I'm looking forward to finishing this and going right to episode two, maybe three and four, and then going to bed, and I'll see how I do after that. So.
Yeah, you haven't watched Daredevil yet, right?
Have not, no.
Waiting for the wife to get
last
home?
Week, yeah, she's out of town. She's coming back, actually coming back a day early, so she's coming back tomorrow.
Nice.
So tomorrow evening, I would say I'm going to start watching Daredevil, but what I'm going to do is watch my boys beat the Dodgers in game one of the World Series.
Oh, boy.
Then maybe we'll watch Daredevil.
Oh, boy.
So I'm calling my shot now. I'm making a bold prediction. So next week when we do this, you can call me out if it didn't happen. But.
Oh, yeah, I started it. I am three episodes in. I won't do any spoilers for anybody, yourself included. But I would be remiss if I didn't talk about the sound. And, you know, that's like a huge thing for me. And Daredevil, since season one, has had some of the best sound mixes in like all of TV and movies. The mix they do, it rivals some movies. And I'll even say like, so this season, their sound mix is better than Infinity War. Yes.
That's a bold statement.
Well, yeah, I know, but if you watch it and this is my recommendation to anybody listening to me right now. So if you're just watching it on a TV with like even just a basic sound bar, you're doing yourself a disservice. So what you need to do is, you know, watch it for the content. It's a great show. You can get all of that from your basic TV. But do yourself a favor, put on a pair of headphones and watch it with headphones, because this is a show, obviously, we know Matt Murdock's still alive. No spoiler there.
Right.
But it's a show about a blind man that uses his two ears to see the world. And they put you in his head. And the way they manipulate the sound is incredible. And
see, you're making it so my wife's going to be out of luck, and I'm going to go start watching it.
It's
here in a few minutes.
Yeah, and it's like I feel bad because this movie, that's why I said movie, this show needs to be shown in a theater with great surround sound. Like, I'm talking, go to your local theater and go, could you play this for me? Obviously they can't, but it's,
right.
You know, without spoiling anything, I can't tell you scenes and stuff like that, but once we get into spoilers later, I'll be able to tell you the scenes. But if you've already started the show, and you're just watching it on regular TV with like a single speaker or just a single sound bar, put on headphones, because it manipulates left and right channels really well, stuff all around you, and you can get it through your headphones. So watch it on a laptop, watch it on your iPad, but put on headphones, a nice pair of stereo headphones, and you'll see it. You'll hear a difference, and it's worth it. Trust me, it's worth it.
Yeah, that's the thing too, going back to Haunting of Hill House. You know, I was at a buddy's house yesterday, and he was gracious enough to give me a second subwoofer. So I brought that home and hooked it up to my system. And yeah, so I sat down to watch Haunting of Hill House, which is on Netflix, but it is recorded in Dolby Atmos. And it's nice. Really the first thing I've sat down and watched start to finish in Atmos since I got my setup here at the house. And that definitely contributes to the creepy factor, I will have to say, because more what I heard going on around me makes you jump a little bit more than anything I saw on the screen, because I could literally hear things like overhead. And with the two subwoofers, there was a couple of, you know, really good moments that brought them both on, and I could feel it even from across the room shaking through the floor. So it's pretty impressive. So not to go too far into the audio file world, but
yeah,
these things are definitely made, they're definitely made to be enjoyed with, you know, a nice surround sound system in the house. So
yep 70%, that's what I was taught a long time ago. Your enjoyment of a movie is 70% sound. So but yeah, I could talk about that all day.
We won't bore everybody with the
and
with all the details.
I know
it does make a difference.
Oh yeah, I know you haven't watched Titans yet, so we'll stay away from that as well. That's another fun one.
Yeah, another one I haven't. Yeah, I can't get into. Although the things I've read online, spoiler free, but it seems to be picking up even over episode one. People seem to really be liking it, which is great, because it was kind of, you know, excuse my language, but it was kind of shit on before it started.
Yeah.
That, you know, nobody was going to like this thing, and now that it's going, you know, everybody seems to like it, and that, you know, really just kind of reinforces our reason for being, right? Because, you know, people like to just take a negative stance on things before they've even watched it.
And, yep, that's what we're living off of. No, I had a great conversation at my local comic book store about it, and I can't wait to talk to you about it, because I have a lot of questions. I think we have a great, we each have a different perspective of the show, because you know everything about the characters and I know nothing. So we're coming at it from two different views. So I can't wait to talk to you about it. Some interesting things happen in episode two. So, I can't wait to get into that later this week too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, the downside is, even though my wife's coming back tomorrow, you know, because she likes to watch these things with me, is, you know, I've got World Series games to watch, so I'm still not going to be able to put these things on and get caught up for a couple of days. So next week when we talk, I'll have watched episodes 2 and 3 of Titans, and probably most, if not all, of Daredevil, so we'll be able to go into it a little bit deeper by then.
Nice. Can't wait. You want to get into what? You got anything else? You want to get into Batman Damned?
We can get into Batman Damned, sure.
All right. I was thinking of starting out with the back cover. Do you want to do that? I'll read the back cover. I have it in front of me.
Yeah. Yeah, because mine's put away. In a, you know, mine's hermetically sealed in a bag and a board in my room because it's worth $1 billion, so nice. I don't want to take it out.
No, mine's not. Mine's thrown around the house. Yeah, we'll read the back cover. We'll give a few opinions, spoiler-free, but then we're going to get into spoilers pretty quick. So if you haven't read it, you can listen a little bit, and then after that, you might want to shut it off because it's worth not having any spoilers. It is only the first issue, though, so. All right, first issue back cover says, first big bold letters, the Joker is dead. And then, there is no doubt about that, but whether Batman finally snapped his scrawny neck or some other sinister force in Gotham did the deed is still a mystery. Problem is, Batman can't remember. And the more he digs into the Labyrinth case, the more his mind starts to doubt everything he's uncovering. So who better to set him straight than John Constantine? Problem with that is, as much as John loves a good mystery, he loves messing with people's heads even more. So with John's help, in quotes, the pair will delve into the sordid underbelly of Gotham as they race towards the mind-blowing truth of who murdered the Joker. Batman Damned, a bi-monthly supernatural horror story told by two of comics' greatest modern creators, a visceral thrill ride that proudly puts the black in Black Label. So, that's the back cover.
Sign me up.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, I got my copy as a couple weeks after it came out. My comic book store had them on back order, but I got an original. I got a first print copy.
Nice.
And after you and I had talked about it, you told me a little bit about it. But yeah, the artwork in this is like almost like nothing I've ever seen in a comic book.
Yeah, I mean it's beautifully done. I mean they really went to the extreme to make it a good looking book. And Lee Bermejo is the artist on that, and you know it's fully painted art, and I mean it looks spectacular. I mean, for it's worth it for nothing else than just to look at the pictures in this book, because he did a great job with it. And I really can't wait to see where it goes, you know, in the next couple of issues. I've seen the cover for issue 2, and that even that, you know, it makes you want to pick it up and read it. So,
well, the cover on issue 1 is, I think Batman looks like he's like become the devil. I mean, it says Damned, so you have that whole, you know, hell and devil just right in the name Damned, but. It's like half of his face looking at the cover is that it's got that red tone to it, but it also looks like it's rotted in its teeth. It looks, I mean, evil. So, I mean, where this is going, we'll get into in a little bit, but the artwork I thought was, I really liked the, I found myself staring at the art longer than reading the pages. And it, you know, it's a 5 to 8 minute read, but it took me like 20 minutes the first time and even longer the second time because I know the words. Now I'm just staring at it. And one of the things I really liked is, this isn't a spoiler, there's going to be flashbacks in it, so big whoop. But did you notice that in the flashback photos, they had that like yellow tint to it, faded yellow? Like I felt like I was looking at photos like that I would see at my grandparents' house from like the 60s, color photos from the 60s and the 70s. And it's like, that's what the flashbacks looked like. I thought that was really cool.
Right. Yeah, they look like period photos. And yeah, they did a good job of kind of aging it to make it like you're looking at, you know, another time period.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty cool. That's all I really got for spoiler free. So we could get into spoilers now.
Okay.
What did you think of the story?
I mean, I think it's pretty interesting. You know, I like the fact that, you know, he doesn't really know what happened. You know, he wakes up, you know, it starts with him waking up in that ambulance, and he doesn't really know what's going on. He doesn't know how he got there, and what has been happening to him. He doesn't at this point even know the Joker was dead.
Right.
You know, so he just kind of wakes up and the EMTs are in the ambulance and they're trying to help him. And of course they're trying to sneak a little peek under the mask to see who he is.
Right.
And that's when he just kind of, you know, goes bat crazy, I guess. And,
yeah. Gets out of there.
Lashes out to protect his identity. But also I think just because he's confused and doesn't really know what's going on and hops out of the back of the ambulance and just kind of stumbles away and falls into the falls off a bridge. And you know, it's kind of not like we're used to seeing Batman, because Batman is known as a character that's very calculated and, you know, doesn't make a move without thinking it through first and is always in control of his faculties. And so this makes it seem like, you know, he's kind of really on the edge and doesn't know what's going on. So I thought it was interesting, and it kind of sucks you in right away to what the story is going to be.
Yeah, and it's funny because I read the story and hadn't read the back cover first. So
right,
as I was reading the story, I'm not understanding. Like, I had already known John Constantine was going to be in it, but I didn't know how. So as I'm reading the story, you get, what, 3-4 pages into it before you realize he's narrating it, the story.
Right.
So it's like, and then once that happens, you're like, okay, now what's truth and what's fiction?
Right, because and, you're looking at it now from his perspective.
Exactly. And I'm now, here's a huge spoiler. By the end of it, I feel like, and let me know if you know, obviously you're going to let me know if you agree or disagree, but I feel like there's a sixth sense kind of thing going on here. Like Batman's, there's a chance Batman's dead. And
yeah,
I got that feel. And then the second time I read it, and then even the third time, I'm seeing stuff in it and I'm going, okay, maybe he's not dead. But then the ending, it almost like he's saying he is dead in the ending. Like, it's right. Just like almost like he's walking around like in the sick, like, you know, like in the sixth sense. And I see dead people. Well, yeah, I see you too, because you're dead. And you find that out at the end. Sorry if I just ruined sixth sense for anybody, but.
Right. Well, spoilers from 30 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you haven't seen that yet, oh well.
Yeah.
But you know what? Do you see what I'm saying?
Speaking of the Sixth Sense, when we're done with this, don't let me forget to talk to you about Tusk, because Joel Osment was in that movie, and I finally got to watch it. Not to derail Batman, we'll keep with that for now, but I did want to bring that up because it was pretty interesting, I thought.
So, all right, yeah, we'll end with that. But yeah, do you understand what I'm saying, at least? Do you see where I'm going?
I do. I didn't get that sense when I was reading it. But I can see, you know, I can see where you're coming from. But you know, we also had, you know, Constantine isn't the only supernatural character that we see in this comic, because we also have Zatanna, but we also have Deadman. And so, I mean, I guess there's a world in that story where a dead man could have even possessed the body of Batman. I don't know.
I don't know where
really
that's going.
I didn't get that sense when I read it, but.
Yeah, see, yeah. I don't know where that's going. So I'm like, I see where it's not going in that direction, and that, like, that sixth sense type thing. But at the same time, I'm like, you know. Like I said, I can go either way with that one. But my overall point is, like, it's pretty cool because either way, it's a good misdirection for me anyways, the way I interpreted it. Heavy, heavy religious tones, you know, undertones, overtone. I mean, it's, you know, God exists in this universe that they're talking about. I mean, Constantine's practically met him. Because he's met the devil.
Well, the thing about the all comics, if you think about the worlds that the comics exist in, there is always a version of hell in every comic. Like, Satan exists as a character in both Marvel and DC comics, but you don't ever hear the reverse.
But you
not to get super religious, but, you know, Jesus and God don't exist as characters or exist as ideas for the most part in,
right,
in Marvel and DC Comics, which is odd because, you know, if you have the one, then, you know, logic dictates that you should have the other.
But in Damned,
I always
he
find
mentions
it interesting
God.
That, right, but
he calls him the big man. Why would you question what the right. big man does? Talks about creation. He talks about all these things, and he talks about them as facts because he's been there. It's kind of weird.
Right.
You know, it's fine. It's, you know.
Oh, I'm not saying, yeah, I don't have an issue with it one way or the other. I mean, we're not going to, just like we don't talk about politics, we don't talk about religion either. But
oh, no.
It's just from
a pure story
standpoint in these universes, it just always kind of struck me that, you know, you always had a version of hell and Satan, but the version of God was more like the mythological gods. Like you have the Norse and the Greek and
right.
The Roman gods, but you don't have, you know, like the Christian God, but you do have Satan. And he, like I said, he exists in both universes. So it always just kind of struck me that, you know, they'll go one way, but they don't really go the other way.
Right. Well, I mean, that's a whole other podcast we could get into. Like, I mean,
Superman, oh, yeah.
You know, Man of Steel has huge religious undertones with,
well,
Superman
I mean,
being...
Superman parallels
Jesus.
The life of Jesus.
Right.
That's been a thing, you know, that's been a, almost a given.
Right.
As long as Superman's been around, but.
Exactly.
But
yeah, so we don't have to go down another.
Yeah.
That's, like I said, that's another podcast, Man of Steel.
We itself. Don't get that deep here on the bright side.
Yeah. Before we get into a couple of the funny things, one of the funny things I read in here, you want to talk about the controversy?
Well, yeah, so I wanted to ask you, because I know we've talked before, and we had a long conversation that didn't actually make it to a broadcast.
Yes.
But, you know, there was obviously a huge controversy with this book regarding some of Batman's anatomy being displayed. But when we first talked, you hadn't seen the book, you didn't own the book. So now that you've seen it, before I kind of get into what the controversy was, I mean, what do you think of it?
I think
overall, do you think it's a big deal or do you think it's not a big deal?
I think it's ridiculous. I think the controversy is ridiculous,
right?
Because,
you know, again, like I mentioned, you know, I don't want to keep referencing a conversation that most of our listeners are never going to hear, but you know,
we're having it now.
Done,
so,
right. But it was done. And I don't want to say like necessarily tastefully done, but it was done in a context that made sense in the story.
Yes.
Like,
yeah,
there was
I mean,
a reason for him to be standing there undressed. It
right.
wasn't gratuitous. It wasn't
well,
anything. It made sense to the story. And, you know, if you're a male, you have certain parts that are part of your anatomy. And if you're standing there with no clothes on.
Right.
And you know, when you live in the real world, you know, you don't have shadows that just conveniently cover one portion of your body.
Right.
So in a comic book, why would they exist that way as well? You know? I mean,
well,
if you're standing there with no clothes on, then you have no clothes on. So,
right.
With all
so,
that being said, it's not like it's not very apparent. Like it doesn't just jump out at you. You really have to look for it to see it. You know,
right. So what you told me about it before I got a copy. When I went in and started reading, I had forgotten about it and I had passed it. I
right.
literally went by it and then was like, wait a minute. Where did that happen? And I mean, we're into spoilers here. So who gives a crap? He gets back and he's getting up, you know, he's taking off his suit and he's asking his computer to analyze his body. So he's
right.
walking in the darkness and it's like, and he's walking to a bunch of other suits and you just see him and the way the light's hitting him. Now, yes, they could have left it out and we wouldn't have known any different, but at the same time, it is so minor and so, it's like, you have to be like, I think you said this to me before. It's like, you have to be looking for it.
Right.
Because
you really do have to look for it.
Right. And it's a ridiculous, ridiculous thing to get upset about because it's not gratuitous at all. It literally fits the story perfectly. He's, you know, he comes back injured and he's just getting his, it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous controversy.
Right. So I guess to bring it into light, though, because maybe there's some people that don't really know. Right. But to bring it, you know, maybe there's some people that don't know, you know, what happened with the book and the controversy around it. So, you know, when the book was released, obviously it's a mature label book, black label, for DC.
Says it on the back, mature audiences or whatever.
It's made for mature audiences, not necessarily made for kids. And this book was released, and, you know, it had some hype going into the release because a lot of people were excited to see, you know, the mature stories. And they liked the creative team. You know, Brian Azzarello and Lee Bermejo have worked together before on The Joker, and, you know, they're a popular team. So people were interested in it. So it had some buzz. But when it came out on Wednesday, it wasn't like people were just running to the shelves to pick it up. I had copies in my store on the shelf that sat there, and they were there when I closed on Wednesday. They were not bought. So it's not like I had people, and people came in, flipped through the book, said, yeah, I like it, but, and again, they may have noticed or not noticed, you know, the nudity, but, you know, just put the book back down and walked away. So it's not like it had this big giant buzz. And then, you know, kind of by the end of Wednesday, once the word got out that, you know, it featured nudity involving Batman, all of a sudden this frenzy breaks out and everybody has to have it. So literally right. The copies I had left in my store sold overnight through, you know, through my web store, and actually oversold to the point where I had to refund orders on Thursday morning. When I opened, because it oversold what I had left in stock. And then, you know, by midday Thursday, you know, this thing, which is a $6.99 comic, was selling for upwards of $50.
Right.
So, I mean, it just went crazy.
But it went up to $50 shortly after DC announced that the next printing, they were going to not blur it out, but they were going to shadow, the whole thing would be a shadow. So they were going to take it out, and so whoever had a copy now, guess what? You have the only copy. So boom, prices go through the roof.
Right. So that's where where the real controversy comes in, is why that decision was made by DC, because that's a reaction that's made by a company that's facing a giant outcry from consumers saying, how could you do this to us? How could you show us this thing or put this product in our hands? And I didn't see that outcry happening anywhere. So I don't know why DC felt the need to take that stance.
Right.
In the first place, like, who was crying to them so loudly that they had to make this change?
Well, the vocal minority. People that aren't even fans are complaining about something that they probably wouldn't even have known about. So, you know what I mean?
But that's what I'm saying is where. Like, I'm pretty tuned in to social media, to Facebook groups, to – this is my industry. I mean, I sell comics for a living, so I'm in all kinds of groups, and I didn't see it. Like, I don't know where this outcry was happening at all that prompted DC to have to make this decision.
Well, some of it, I think, is, and I said this to you before, I think some of it's on DC's part just to generate interest, where they come out and go, oh, there's a controversy here. And I wouldn't put it past a company just to do it to generate the interest.
But and, I could go you with
know,
you.
You do a straw man thing, like, people are complaining. The next thing you know, of course, you're going to find people that do complain. But it generates interest, and the fans are like, all right, I get, you know, this is something hot, and we're into, you know.
I could go with you there if their decisions were going to make them more money. But it doesn't, for a couple of reasons. Number one, DC makes no money off of the secondary market. They have already sold all their copies of this book to retailers at standard discount at $3 or so a book. So they don't make any money by trying to inflate the aftermarket value of this book. Well, hang on, let me say. So the second thing is, they could say, well, we're going to change it and we're going to put out a second printing so that we can sell even more copies because now it has the buzz. But DC is not doing that. They have not done a second print and have announced that they're not doing one anytime in the near future. So I don't understand where they gain by putting something out and then changing their mind right away to create a buzz. Because at that point, the sales were already made. Same thing with DC. Like, DC as a company, they don't care if the shops sell the books or not. All they care is that they sold all their copies. They're just fine if they sit unsold and collect dust on our shelves for the next 2 years, because they've already been paid.
Right.
So I don't follow that line of thinking, saying that they did it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just can't see where they benefit from that.
Yeah, from that perspective, I understand what you're saying, but somebody somewhere along the line, it boosted sales at the initial shot did. But like you said,
I can only see it if they're sitting on, you know, if DC was sitting on a bunch of unsold copies.
Right.
That would be a way for them to move all of their copies. But this was a sellout book before it even hit the stands, you know, from DC's perspective.
Right.
If not, it was sold out pretty early on Wednesday. You know, because these companies are notorious for not printing too much more than what the stores have ordered anyway, so they don't sit on a bunch of copies. But unless there was a world where they were actually sitting on copies that they had an account selling them on eBay for 10 times the price, I don't see a reason why they would try to inflate the prices.
Right.
All they have really done, in my mind, all they've done at this point is hurt their ability to sell issues 2 and 3 because of the decision they made to basically to not reprint it and to change it, because it caused such a frenzy for this book that speculators came out in droves and snatched up every single available copy. And the people that actually were interested in reading the book weren't able to get their hands on it and are probably not looking to spend 50 to 80 or 90. At one point, these things went up to about $100 an issue. They've come down since then. But the problem is the speculators aren't coming back for issue 2 and 3.
Right.
They don't care. All they want is the flip potential.
Right.
The readers won't come back for issues 2 and 3 because they haven't been able to get issue 1 to read.
Wow.
So
yeah, that's a good point.
I think they've made some poor decisions by stating that they're not going to do a second printing of this.
Right.
Because
that's interesting.
You know, honestly,
that's
for me,
great point.
Yeah, for me as a retailer, I don't know how to order issue 2 because it's not going to be – I can't order it assuming that everybody that bought issue 1 is coming back for issue 2.
Right.
Because I know that several copies I sold weren't to readers. So I wouldn't be surprised. And the other thing with this too is, you know, you read it on the back of the book. This is switched now from a bi-monthly title to basically a tri-monthly title. Issue 2 doesn't hit the stands until December, and then Issue 3 is coming in March. So they've put months between.
They changed
it?
Because it was supposed to be November 21st.
Right. So when they made the announcement that they weren't going to do a second printing, they also made an announcement changing the release dates.
Oh, that's
nice. I have to believe that somewhere in the beginning of December, before this thing comes out, they're going to make an announcement for a second printing. But you know, once again, from our end as a retailer, we order December books now. Like, I'm ordering for December in October. So they're not solicited as second prints. So I don't think it's coming, but I still somehow I feel like they have to figure out a way to get second prints out there so that they can sell issues 2 and 3.
Right.
Otherwise they're really shooting themselves in the foot on those future sales. And that's a shame because it's a great story and people are wanting to read it. Like, I still have people coming in looking for it that don't care about the value of it necessarily. They're just looking for the story. And now they're resigned to basically just having to wait till the whole thing is said and done and hoping, you know, when the trade paperback comes out, they can just pick all three of them up and read them.
Yeah.
But, so I don't know. There really is a big, there was a controversy, and then there's some problems around the way this thing was released and the way I think DC has handled the controversy. because they, by stating what they stated, they dried up the market of availability of these books. So I think they're, you know, there's a concern that the next couple of issues won't be able to sell at the same rate as this one did.
Right. Well, we'll see. We'll
and then
see.
The other question that comes to mind is why the delay? Was there other things that happened in those books that now they're afraid to publish and they're having to have art recommissioned? Like, are they changing the books? They haven't said, so we can only guess, but there's no reason to change the release date if the books were ready to go. And
right.
It makes it seem to me like, you know, these things are being altered now, and we're not going to get, and again, this is just all my speculation, so don't write in and, you know, write in or comment in and tell me, you know, I'm wrong, because I'm just guessing, but I feel
like there was things in
these books that now they don't want us to see, and so we may never, and obviously if we don't see it, we'll never know we didn't see it, but in my mind,
right.
We're not getting the original vision that was out there, because I have a feeling that they're changing some things.
But even this, if they had left out the quote nudity and we never knew about it, it doesn't change the story. It's still a fun story. It's still a fun book.
Right. But we can only guess to what might be being cut out from further issues.
Yeah,
it may have been more than just
I don't think they're going to change the overall storyline. So, I mean,
most likely not. It'll just be recommissioned art. But
I'm not
you know, being
worry
an artist.
About that.
You know, being an artist and growing up with an artistic background, both you and I have. You know, you're changing the vision, the creator's vision of, you know, the product they wanted to put out. So,
yeah,
who knows?
But I'm not going to worry about something that may or may not happen, or if it did happen, I don't know what happened. It's like there's way too many stuff. Too many comics for me to read, too many movies for me to see, to start worrying about what could that movie have been like if they did it this way. It's like,
For sure. You know. It's just my speculation.
No, I know.
In overdrive and
exactly.
You know, wondering what,
what
their plans are. Exactly.
Yeah.
If we didn't have something to talk about, it'd be pretty short and boring.
Yeah, exactly. We're trying to keep this to 20 to 30 minutes and we've already gone long.
We're already way over that.
Yeah,
I have a tendency to go on when I get excited about things.
Yeah, so actually, before we get to, what's it called, Tusk?
Yeah.
Is that what it is? There was one line in the book that I thought was a riot, and I stopped the first time I read it, the second time I read it, and the third time I read it, and I was like, no way, that's BS. And it's a funny line. It's like, you remember the part where he's like, what separates us from the animals? And it's not thumbs. And they say, you know, rats have thumbs. And first off, I was like, they do? And then he said, no. That made me think until I got to the part where he goes, what it is, and this is Constantine talking, he says, animals can't and don't lie. It's strictly a human trait that animals don't lie. And you start to think about it, and you're like, oh, yeah, I guess they don't. And I'm like, no, that's BS. Animals lie. I have two dogs. They lie all the time. And the Well, the obvious ones, like, my wife will come home after I fed the dogs, and they'll run up to her, and they're begging her to eat. They'll look at their bowls, and, like, they want to be fed. And, like, did you just eat? And they just look at her and go, we need to eat. We need to eat. But they've just eaten. That's an easy one. Here's one. It's a bold-faced lie. I have a husky, and I have this little dog. It's like a mini pin type thing. The mini pin will want the toy that the husky is playing with. Sitting on the floor, the husky's playing, chewing a bone, or whatever it is. The little dog, Stanley, he will all of a sudden jump up, start barking, and run at the front door like somebody's there. The husky sees it, and she runs to the front door. And then Stanley comes back, barking at us, I need to go out. We're like, okay, you guys want to go out? Yeah. I open the door. The husky bolts for who knows what. Stanley turns around and goes and gets the bone that the husky was eating.
Yeah, but is that a lie or is that just being smart?
But it's a lie. There's nobody outside. He set up and manipulated a lie to get the husky off the toy. Don't tell
me. I say it's just being clever, man. That's survival of the fittest.
Exactly. It is clever. It's clever because it's a lie. He came up with a lie that there's somebody outside to get the husky to go after it. And we see it and we're like, we laugh and you're amazed by it. But it's like, I know it's just a comic book and it's a line in a comic book, but I thought it was a great story that goes along with it. I'm like, but it's like every time it happens, we laugh and you're like, how smart is that dog and how dumb is the husky that falls for it every time?
Yeah, it's pretty, right. I was gonna say, how smart is the one or conversely, how dumb is the other one? Cause yeah. Probably falls for it every time.
Oh yeah. So, but anyways, let's get into, that was Batman Damn. Let's get into Tusk. Let's, quickly.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, quickly, but I just wanted to bring it up because, you know, I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan. I always have been. I saw Clerks back 25 years ago and loved it. And I've basically followed him and loved him ever since. Listen to tons of podcasts and they're all his because he does about 175 different podcasts. But I listened to three or four of them. But I never got around to watching Tusk, although I've heard him talk about it multiple times on different broadcasts.
I've never heard of it. I don't listen to a ton of his stuff, so.
Yeah, so I just thought, I mean, let's be frank. The movie is not very good, in general. I mean, it's very interesting and it's kind of disturbing, but it's not a great movie. I loved it because I love Kevin Smith and I'm into some crazy stuff and, you know, I have a weird sense of humor. So I really like the movie. But don't rush out and watch it if you're listening to this thinking it's a great movie.
You find the movie?
It's on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
But what I wanted to talk about was the evolution of the movie. I mean, I don't want to get into too many spoilers, but
yeah, I haven't seen it.
This movie was right. I'm hoping that you'll watch it soon so we can talk about it some more. But you have to watch the movie and then you have to listen to the podcast that birthed it because this entire movie was written in about 15 minutes on a podcast. And I just thought it was genius that, you know, here's the two guys sitting around just like we're doing, talking on a podcast, and they come across this story written in a newspaper where a guy's looking for, to take on a lodger to come stay in his house. And he spins this story about, you know, all his adventures and things like that and wants to get somebody to come and stay with him and listen to his stories. And, there's some more to it, but again, I don't want to say anything to spoil it if you haven't watched it, but. Yeah. They get to just talking about this article of this guy and just start riffing on it and basically write a horror movie in about 15 minutes on this podcast as a goof. I mean, they're like,
so
I have never heard anybody laugh as loud as these two guys were laughing as they're just basically telling this stupid story that they're making up on the spot about this guy that wrote this letter.
So should I listen to the podcast first or watch the movie, then listen to the podcast?
I enjoyed it more watching the movie and then listening to the podcast, but I had kind of already heard versions of this story through his other, you know, listening to him through his other podcast.
How did you hear about it? But yeah, okay.
But, well, at the end of the movie, it's funny because at the end of the movie when they're doing the credits, it says based on episode 259 of Smodcast. So it tells you exactly where find it.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
And so I went and I listened to it and, you know, it's not available in its uncut form for free. Like you got to go to Stitcher's back catalog if you want to listen to the entire thing, which is about an hour and a half. But this conversation takes place in about 25 minutes and that cut down version is on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
YouTube audio. Yeah, and that's all you really need to listen to. Not to take any money away from Kevin Smith if you want to listen to the whole thing. You should, but again, these guys were just rolling on the floor laughing as they're coming up with this ridiculous story, for this movie. And they get to the end of it and they put up a poll on Twitter to see if their listeners want to see him make this movie. And there was two different hashtags that they put up. And one was basically hashtag yes, and the other one was hashtag no. And so many people responded that they wanted to see this stupid movie made, that he goes out and makes this movie. And I've never in my life heard of a movie that got made anywhere that was put out for people to see because of a joke on Twitter and through this hashtag. And I just thought it was genius. Like, it's completely brilliant that, you know, he has the ability to go out and make this movie that, you know, is a joke. And quite honestly, most people don't want to see. But
yeah, okay.
But enough of his listeners.
Enough. You know, you've sold me.
If you watch the movie and you are a listener of a lot of his podcasts, there are so many Easter eggs and so many things thrown into this movie that just reference back to his podcast. In fact, the main character is a podcaster. So it's just,
oh, really?
And so then I'm watching it, and it is his best friend. You know, the main character is played by Justin Long. So they have some, you know, pretty good name people in this movie. You know, Justin Long plays the protagonist, but his best friend, and it took me a while to figure out who he was, but it's Haley Joel Osment from The Sixth Sense.
You said that earlier.
The girlfriend, who I'd never seen before, and I'm completely in love with now, by the way, Genesis Rodriguez. Yeah, she's something. Like I said, I recommend it if you like his stuff at all, or if you've kind of got a little bit off the wall.
Well, for you, John, I'm going to give it a shot and then listen to the podcast. I don't know if I'll have time to do it before our next podcast, but
it's about 2 hours of your life. The movie's about 90 minutes and then it's 25 minutes or so of the podcast.
Oh, all right.
The other part of it that I thought was really cool, there's a character in there called Gila Point, and it took me a while to figure out who he was. But the funny thing is when you watch the credits for the movie, he's credited as Gila Point. Basically, like, he's credited as playing himself. But it's not. It's an actor, and it's a very well-known actor, but if I didn't know who it was ahead of time, I would never figure out who he was, but he's just a really wacky character too that, you know, kind of hides well in the role, and it's pretty cool. Yeah. So like I said, not to go too far off onto that, but I did want to bring it up just because I watched it on Saturday and listened to the podcast, and I just thought it was brilliant that, the evolution of this thing.
You texted me right after it, and you're like, have you seen Tusk? And I wrote back, I'm like, I don't even know what that is.
Right. So, that's the thing. A lot of people don't. You really have to be, you kind of have to deep dive on Kevin Smith, because this thing did go to the theaters, but it was in the theaters for about 15 minutes and didn't make any money, you know. And there's actually a sequel to it now, too.
Yeah.
He did a sequel, and he's working on a third part. So, he did a sequel called Yoga Hosers, which is also was very poorly received, and is also on Netflix. And that's my next deep dive.
Stop selling it to me. I'm sold.
Jeez. I'm telling you now about another movie.
I know. Stop. Yeah. That's funny. All right. Well, now we've gone like almost double the time we wanted to go.
That's all right. Our listeners have nothing but time.
Yeah, I wish. So, all right. I'll wrap it up for this episode, for this issue. Batman Damned issue of Brightside. All right. That was it. And please follow us on Twitter at @thebrightsidechat_. Actually, I'm sorry. Please follow us on Twitter @thebrightside_chat, not the other way around. What is our Facebook again?
And you can hit us up on Facebook at facebook.com/thebrightsidechat.
Yeah, and any questions, comments, you can email us at thebrightsidechat@gmail.com. And if you listen to this, we're on SoundCloud because that's the only place we're on right now. We're going to be venturing off of that pretty, not off of it, but else. Other places soon. So, cool. Yep. Looking forward to that. thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon, probably later this week with some news and stuff. But that one will be shorter because John's got his team.
That's what we
to
said.
Watch.
That's what we said about this one.
Yeah, I think we can promise that one because you got baseball to watch.
That's right.
All right, we'll talk to you then.
All right,
thanks a lot.
Take care, bye. Everyone. All right, bye.
Hey, Fred.